Blog Talk Radio.
again, it is on. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival. This four-part series is going to be called A September to Remember. Each Thursday in September 2013, we're going to interview an enterprising African-American male author. What we're going to do is we're going to pick their brains, try to see what makes them tick. Now, you can find out more about the lineup for A September to Remember on tribefamilychannel.com. And while you're there, check out the lineup for the upcoming in October, like no other, where we're going to feature enterprising African-American female authors. Now, you can also find Tribe Family Channel on Facebook and Twitter at @TribeFamilyUS. This show is going to be brought to you by none other than JoyPinkney.com, where you can get tons of, where you can find tons of author interviews, book reviews, author interview trailers and the like. And also, for people that are interested in advertising on this literary festival, we have 6 more slots available. If you would like the pricing and some of the details of that, just go to joypinney.com, hit the contact me button, fill out the form, and I'll be more than happy to send you the information. We have a lot of call-in. We have a lot of people that's listening live to the show, but the real goal for this advertising opportunity is the archive, because we have tens of thousands of people listening to the archives after we've finished doing the show. I'm your host, Joey Pinkney, a.k.a. JoeyPinkney.com, a.k.a. your favorite book reviewer, period. Today is September 12th, 2013, and we are featuring the CEO and founder of Prodigy Publishing Group, the entertainer himself, Raheem Brooks. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good today.
Barely hear you, man. What'd you say?
Hold on a second, Joey.
All right.
Hold on a second. Let me, I'm doing good today. How about you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. It's an honor and a pleasure to actually get a chance to speak with you. You know what I'm saying? We've been working with each other for on and off quite a long time. So, you know, this isn't our first interaction, but this is the first time we actually get a chance to sit down and speak with each other. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited too. I think you've been on all my projects. So,
I have to. I was just looking at that. Yeah, I was looking at my website, and I noticed that we first interacted. First time I posted something about your by one of your releases was July 7th of 2010. So we've been doing this about over 3 years now, you know what I'm saying? So we got a little bit of history between us, and that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
I want to start off by asking you about this current book. Like, the most recent book is A Murder in Germantown. Is that right?
That's right.
All right, so tell us a little bit about that book, and how did you come about making it is what it is? You know, how did you come up with the storyline and everything for this?
Well, of course, Murder in Germantown is a it's a mystery, and there's also a legal thriller as well. But I always want to star African Americans in my leading roles, no matter what kind of novel it is. If I was to even do a something in outer space, you know, it would definitely have a black main character.
Right.
When I was younger, I wanted to be an attorney, and that was like one of my
goals.
Yeah, it was one of my goals. Even as far back as in high school, I was in the social studies, law and government magnet program, so I always wanted to be in politics and be a lawyer. So, I had to make a novel where my main character was an attorney, and that's where the story began, that I wanted to make an attorney, and then I had to give him a case, and I had to basically, study a lot to make all the clues add up and make the trial go the way it did in the book. So
now,
it was a lot of time.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to ask you this. If I'm not mistaken, Germantown is a neighborhood inside of North Philly, right? Is this the Germantown that you're from? Is that the setting? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you go about picking this, your own neighborhood for this book?
I don't know. I have a small neighborhood in North Philadelphia, so it's not like it's one of the bigger places in the city, but I wanted to basically my main character was born and raised in Germantown, so
Okay.
Although he did go to he went to Harvard and Columbia universities. He came back to the city, and now he lives in downtown. He doesn't live in Germantown, but his family still does. And the case that he represents is from Germantown. So I think I wanted to just pull as much from the area as I could and have him go to the area. Like, he did interviews in the area. He goes to the barbershop in the area. So I basically bring readers from all around the world to Germantown.
Okay. Now, in an interesting twist for this particular character, his name is Ravon Lamel, right? Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay. One of the interesting things about this particular character is he's divorced, right?
He is divorced.
But he's also a homosexual.
Exactly.
How did you go about, what made you kind of pick those two elements and put them together in one character?
Well, it's 2013, and that's where we are in society. And, well, it actually started out with a discussion with a bookstore owner. And the discussion was basically a novel that could, well, we were trying to figure out a novel that could, you know, basically garner readers that were both gay and straight, but not make the book an actual gay novel.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So that was the interesting thing. That was the most interesting thing, like I said, that's the most interesting thing about the character.
Right.
But this, despite that, go ahead.
I was going to tell you, it's the interesting thing, but it's definitely not the only thing he has going on. That's not his main thing, you know. It's an aspect of his life, but in terms of, like, the plot and the things that he goes through, you know, that's just an aspect of him, right?
Right. That's just an aspect of him. That really plays no role in it plays a role in his life, because it is a very interesting story, because there is one point where he has an interaction with a prosecutor. But the thing is, he has had sex with this female prosecutor, and now that he has exposed his lifestyle, you know, she kind of hates him, and I made her the lead prosecutor on the very biggest case that he's defending throughout the book. So his interactions with her are interesting, because she just makes it an interesting one. But other than that, other than when he's home, like, you know, his lifestyle it plays no role in his life.
Right. Now, you were talking about him, you know, having gone to Harvard, and if I'm not mistaken, you do also, right, for journalism.
Right. I actually go for
right.
English.
English, I'm sorry. Okay, English, right. Go ahead.
No, it didn't start out with him going to Harvard. It started out with him going to Columbia, but I had took a trip to Boston, and when I did, I went to the Harvard Law School, and that kind of made me use that, because I had been there, and it was a little bit easier for me to write and describe him actually when he did. There's like two areas in the book where he like has not like a flashback, but he does revisit a story from him getting like really, really drunk in college. And
right.
It was easy to set him at Harvard Law School as opposed to somewhere else where I couldn't put readers there.
Right, I see that. Now, as far as you're concerned, though, with you having going to Harvard, and you also went to school at UCLA, so you're pretty well traveled. Where I'm going with that is most of your books, if not all of them, are still rooted in Philadelphia. Why is Philly such a focal point for you, considering how well traveled you are?
Well, the characters actually they moved to New York City, so
okay,
it's half of Philadelphia, half of New York, and Contest is half of Philadelphia and half of LA, and then Dilator is basically all Philadelphia, and the Murder in Germantown it's in Philadelphia, but it also at the very end. There's some things going on in Boston where Harvard is at. So I kind of I have kind of used all three of the places that I've lived. And,
yeah.
Well, I haven't lived in New York, but I've been to New York so many times that I can bring different things to life in New York City. And it was easy for me to do that. I haven't written a novel solely based in another area because I don't read that many books that take place in Philadelphia. And
your voice is starting, your volume is starting to go down a little bit.
Yeah, because actually it's raining really bad, so I can't be in a bad signal all of a sudden.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Well, I was going to ask you something. In terms of
it just started raining.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, it's raining out here too. In terms of the lead up to you were talking about Laugh Now, how it's kind of based also in New York. The lead up to this book, you were in prison when you actually wrote most of, if not all of Laugh Now, correct?
Yeah, Laugh Now was done before I was out.
Yeah, all right. So what was the lead up to it? Like, what's the backstory to your first novel? Because you hit the ground running, but I know it wasn't an overnight success type thing. There had to been some type of blood, sweat, and tears going into making it the finished product that it is. So tell us a little bit about that. Like, what were you doing in terms of writing this book? What was your experiences that you put in?
Well, you know the funniest thing that I was doing.
Okay.
I was doing what a lot of authors actually don't do. I was reading. That's all
okay.
I could do. I had no internet access. I didn't have researching access. All I had was books to read. So
mm-hmm. What were you reading? What was on your reading list during this time?
Well, 90% of it was just fiction novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through reading the fiction novels from Street Lit up into my favorite genre, which is mystery suspense. So
right.
It started out with me just reading, James Patterson, John Grisham. I hadn't heard of, Street Lit. That wasn't the only thing Street Lit I had ever read was Sister Soldier.
Okay,
but That was it. And even when I read that, I didn't consider that as Street Lit because back when I read it, Street Lit wasn't a genre. I didn't know what that was. Nobody knew what that was. So
right.
To me, it was just a good book that starred black characters and they was in like a ghetto and they sold drugs and it was interesting from that perspective. But it
right.
didn't but just reading books and I was just reading and I was seeing the difference between I started comparing Street Lit authors and I started comparing them with mainstream, but I now know because then I didn't know that there was this mainstream or indie. Those terms didn't resonate. I didn't know what they were, but I knew that this book was based in the ghetto and it read like that. And these books are based on upper class people of society, and it's written like it. I saw that there was a distinct writing style difference between the two, and I said that I would want to write about the hood and the ghetto, but I wouldn't want to write like that. I would want to write like
mm-hmm.
this.
Right.
And I think that's what, that's pretty much what got me, my mind made up on wanting, like you say, hitting the ground running, because I always knew that I wanted to be a broad author. I didn't want to be like
mm-hmm.
boxed into, he's just a black author. And,
right.
So in terms of thinking and in terms of selling and in terms of marketing, promotion, and all of those things, it was never, I only want to just go and hit Don Diva magazine and Double XL and Smooth.
And Fed.
The books, right, the magazines where I saw majority of the black material at. But I opened up the Wall Street Journal and there's James Patterson with a whole full page ad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I started thinking to myself, I would want to add in the Wall Street Journal. That's where I would want to add it.
It
reached the masses, and those people have money to spend. So that's the way I had looked at it, and that's pretty much, how in my head, in there with nothing to do, as far as action, all I can do is think and plan. I have notebooks, about four of them, with ideas and things I wanted to do. I like cut out ads. I had different pictures of what other authors were doing and the different events and conferences. And I told myself that
I'm going to be going to these conferences. I'm going to go to these conferences. I'm going to get ads like this. I'm going to create marketing material like this. I'm going to target stores. I'm going to target areas. And I just really, I was so excited. I could not wait to do it. That was that. I think that is what got me. You call it an overnight success. I just don't. I don't really think I've done.
I said I knew it wasn't one. I know it didn't just pop up and then everything was all peachy keen. I know it had to have been something. I knew it was a lead up to it.
Yeah, it just was. And with the lead up, is really thinking and planning ahead. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do anything. I just had all these notes and all this material, and I was like, I used to study it. I used to look at it over and over. I had like these whole plans on how it was going to happen. And I think my head kind of, it's like almost like learning how to do algebra. Like once you learn how to do like one, you pretty much could pick up two and three and calculus fairly easy. And I think that's what it was when I was out and I was able to talk to other authors and publishers and get information and read about other things. I think that is what made it seem kind of easy for me because I had already, like, kept myself up for those beginning things.
One thing I noticed was in one of your earliest videos, you were talking about being in a certain bookstore, and you said, I own this section right here. You know, these books right here, either I bought them, I read them, or I hid them somewhere else. But I was doing my due diligence and doing research. And I thought it was pretty interesting because, I mean, that's really what a lot of times sets you up for success or failure in your ability to plan ahead and actually kind of look at things business-wise as opposed to just saying, I'm just going to write a book and everybody's going to buy it just because I wrote it and it's interesting. You actually did the background information and sat down and looked through books. And I remember even seeing, I can't remember if it was the interview you did with me or another one where you actually said when you was reading books prior to writing, you were actually looking where the commas were, where the quotation marks go and, you know, and how different things were structured, you know, how chapters began and how they ended and stuff, just so you can actually hone your skills so that when you do come out with your own writing that it's, you know, it's fairly top-notch.
Yeah, okay. Again, when I'm first out, I don't have no money. I have family members that are, like, helping me make it through the day, you know what I'm saying, but you know,
yeah.
I have to often, I'm often aware of when I had to get a haircut once a month, when I had two pair of jeans and, you know, $5 white t-shirts. That was my daily wardrobe every day.
Right.
I remember
right.
those days, and I didn't have money to buy books, so I had to go to Borders every day. I went almost, Joey, I swear, I went at least 5 times a week to this one Borders. They had a cafe. It was the biggest one in the city, and I went there. And because I couldn't buy the books, they have a set. You know how Borders, you can go to the cafe, you can take the books from the shelves and read them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would read them. I would read them. I would take notes. I did have a cell phone. I would take pictures of certain sections. I still have those pictures. I had the pictures of those sections. I have notes that I've taken from the books where I couldn't buy them, but I had access to them. And that's why in that video, when I thought about doing the video, I wanted to go to that border specifically because it meant a lot that I really did a lot of that stuff just sitting there at the borders reading. I did not have nobody to really – like when I got on Facebook, my book was already done. I didn't get on Facebook at then. Like, you know, a lot of authors, they think about writing the book already on Facebook with a ton of – Facebook friends that are authors, and they, you know, they get to the inbox, and they're poof, they just going to get information, and it's going to just work. But it doesn't work like that. And,
right.
You know, you have to. The more you know, the more successful you're going to be. People often try to figure out, like, oh, well, you're doing this, you're doing that. Yeah, but people inbox me about more stuff that I even research myself now because they know that I'm an author. That if you ask me to come to an event, I won't care if it's in California, I'm going to come if I could put it on my schedule. I will be there.
Right.
I've been to events in almost every major city, and people take notice of that kind of stuff like that. So when people inbox me like this particular show right here, I was invited to come do this show. Like, people invite me to come do things all the time because they know that I'm consistent and I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to always, I'm going to try to make the show a success, me a success, and everything that surrounds me a success. That's just how it is. So a lot of times, I don't get the stuff because people are just like, oh, go get him. No, you have to make a name for yourself. You have to do the work.
Right.
When you do the work, then it of course it seems easier.
That's true, but it's still work. You still have to be,
yeah,
you know, even after the fact, it's not like everything gets handed to you and it's all easy street.
No, and that's why I continue to post the way that I do as aggressively, because I need people to understand that, yeah, you see me at the movies, at dinner, but you also see that laptop in that back seat of this car. I could pull that laptop out anywhere they got a Wi-Fi, and I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm never on chill mode. Like, I'm always thinking of what I could do next, what I can do better. I said, like, 2 days ago, I bought 40 folders, and I just told myself, Raheem, go back to the one thing you did from the very beginning that got me a great reputation with bookstores. Before my first book came out, Laugh Now,
mm-hmm.
I had bought folders. And I had printed the book cover on 8x11 stickers. So I put the stickers over the folders, and inside the folders I had like a picture of me, the book bio, an excerpt. I had some promo material, and I sent that along with a copy of the book to about 20 stores. I remember because I used to send about. Because it was at one point, I didn't even have the actual books to send. I had to send the media kit, and I had to send the books separately, directly from CreateSpace. I didn't even have the books.
Right. Okay.
So,
okay. But you're still making your presence known.
Believe me, I didn't have money. I didn't have nothing. I could post, like, my initial sales, my initial purchases from CreateSpace. And you would see sometimes I bought 2 books. I bought 5 books. I bought 3. All to get me up to like my initial 50 to do my first book signing.
Right.
This wasn't easy.
It was. I mean, the hard work is definitely paying off. But and your point is well stated. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that a lot of authors don't really take into account when they look at the success on the back end. Like they see an Essence bestseller author, or they see somebody looking good in a, you know, at a table, you know, with a stack of books and the table all laid out and the promo materials and these 7-foot banners and stuff. But they don't really think about all the back end work of grinding, of preparing yourself, of putting 7 people's hands. And sometimes people don't even want to take it because they don't even think you're serious to start off with. You know, they don't see all that.
No.
It's just kind of hop straight in the water and start swimming.
It took me 2 years to buy a banner. I couldn't afford no banner. Listen, Joey, and this is no lie. My first book event outside of Philadelphia was in New York City with Sister T. She had she's a part of Art Book Club.
Yeah.
And
she had a book stand
in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
I lied to you not, Joey. That morning I had $40 in my pocket. $20 was for a round trip Megabus ticket, right? Now, when I get to New York, I still have to get from Penn Station to Harlem. I have to eat something. You know what I'm saying? So, luckily, the books I sold there, and she paid me for them, of course, after the signing. But then she had bought like 10 books as well. So, but I did that 3 times. I went to 3 different book events outside of the city with basically. Just my ticket there and back, and enough money to get from the downtown area to my books on it. People don't even understand that. Like, most people would get discouraged and say, I'm not going out of town with no money. But for me, I was saying to myself, I don't give a damn what I got to do. I started off just thinking I'm going to be a national bestselling author, and that's all I could think in my head. And I think the only way to do that was for me to be a national author. You need to go to these places, you need to travel there. And that's what I did. That's how I started meeting all the people I met. And is meeting those people and making those connections very early on, because they all remember. Sister T remembers that. She remembers those days. I have pictures of those days. Everyone that I met in that initial first month, 2 months, 3 months ahead of my book come out, all of those people I am very tightly, closely connected with, all of them people.
Yeah, I mean, because you put in, a, I mean, like you said, you're pretty much running on fumes, but you had that drive. Let me ask you this, because, I mean, one thing that's always stood out to me about you was that you have a very strong personality, and I'm pretty sure not everybody appreciates it for what it is, but, you know, sometimes people take your confidence in yourself the wrong way because they don't see the stuff that you just explained. You know, they see all the trimmings, but they don't see all the risks and chance and stuff that you've taken. What makes you so driven? What made you so driven in? Because, I mean, you had plenty of opportunities to quit, I'm sure. But was it a certain experience, or have you always been just, like, obsessed about certain things and you just happen to pick books? What is it about you that makes you so driven to see success?
You know what? this is funny. Is some people for the end of the road? I can best explain this a little backwards. Some people just say they want to be rich. Some people just want to be successful, and some people just want to be famous. Well, fortunately for me, I want to be rich, successful, and famous. I was just telling one of my friends, maybe today or yesterday or less, that I really want to be famous. I want to walk down Fifth Avenue to, you know, just walk down the street, and I want people to be like, oh, my God, that's Raheem Brooks. He wrote 45 books. You know, I envision that happening to me. Like, but in the beginning, now I'm taking you back, I didn't. I thought I was just writing a book. I was going to publish this book. I would make a little bit of money. I would find me a job, and I would just go to be a regular, normal person. I would just do my little 9-to-5 day, go home, and, you know, I would be like that. I never thought that I would be having 5 books. I never thought about having a publishing company, publishing other people. People submit me books. Like, I get cursed out for not wanting to publish more books. I never envisioned it like this, but now that I have, all I see is the great things. I mean, do I think that there has to be a shortfall somewhere? I think the shortfall for me is, I think that my personal interactions as far as like my family and closer friends, I think those have all changed, and I don't think it's because you know, me becoming, you know, a little successful. I think it's more because my priorities and what I want out of life has changed. If everybody is from the same Indian tribe and we all believe in the same things, it's very difficult for a person to leave the Indian tribe, go live in Manhattan for 10 years, and they go back to the Indian tribe and they not look at him like a total different person. Like, the sad part is that I haven't done anything to change my personality because any job I've ever had, like, I'm the same person. Any job I've ever had, any schooling, I've always wanted to get straight A's. I always did that. I always wanted to have great friendships. I always wanted to go out and have fun and have dinner. All of the things I'm doing now, I'm able to do it on social media, but I'm already doing this all the time. It's just that I feel like I'm the outcast. Weird to me. It's weird that I feel like I have to start all over. Like, my friends are people that I have maybe met one time in person. Mm-hmm. I have closer, like, you're not a friend, but you and I have dealt with each other, like you said, since July 2010. That is a very long time to know somebody, and, you know, you can really gauge a lot about me and my life through my social networking posts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to speak on that for a second, because you were talking about, well, I was asking about being driven, and you were talking about your desire to not only make money, but also to be famous. A perfect extension of that is the fact that you dub yourself the Authortainer. Tell us more about what this. Give us the concept of this. You know, because not on the outside, it kind of makes sense. You know, you putting together an entertainer, an author, but, you know, for people that don't really know what that is. You know, let us into this world, this entertainer world. What is this?
Well, you know, I really do set out to entertain people. I've always thought that books are no different than movies, comedy, sports, theater. I am an entertainer. My job is to entertain people. For however long they're sitting reading this book, they need to be entertained. But in extension to that, again, social media allows me to personally entertain them. It allows me to do that. So, you know, I love taking people on my trips. Yeah, you want to you don't have to physically go to Disney World with me, but I will post 199,000 pictures so that you can go there with me. You can go.
That's true. Well, I saw one of them where you was using a hotel room that had like two stories. It was like you went upstairs and you showed what was going on downstairs, and then you kind of took the camera upstairs. You know, and,
oh, the video.
And let people see what you say.
It was a video. But do you know what's so funny is also, you know what? I need to bring this to a point. That was in Atlanta, and I had with my cousin at the time. My cousin went with me, who was supposed to be my assistant, but, you know, family never do what they're supposed to do. So, that little scenario. But I wanted to be, you know, because we used to get two separate hotel rooms, but I couldn't find a good one for the cost in Atlanta. So I found one that had two bedrooms in it, and it had one bedroom downstairs and one bedroom upstairs. What was so interesting is that the hotel room was only $129 a night, and I just was like, I had to take a video because I really could not believe that that's what I was getting for $129. It had blew my mind away.
Yeah.
So,
and it was,
you know,
I was watching like, dang, that's a pretty decent spot. I mean, I wasn't factoring in price, but that makes it even sweeter. But I'm just like, where is he going? Like, how is he going upstairs?
Right, that was the whole thing. It was, I couldn't believe, first when I walked in, the whole opening, the space was big enough where, like, they could have just had the bed right there and the one bedroom that was right behind it. But to have a whole upstairs with a whole bathroom up there and, like, a whole tub and all, it was very interesting. And, you know, let me clarify this for anybody that is listening. Let me clarify something. Raheem Brooks is not a bragger. Raheem Brooks is not stuck up. Raheem Brooks is not conceited. What Raheem do is, the people that I admire the most are the people that say to me that I inspire them, because that's why I post. I don't post to brag about what I'm doing. I post so that other authors that were in the same place I was when I had no book, so they can see, when you work hard, this is what you do. It's almost normal for me to do everything. Everything I do is so normal nowadays, I don't even know how I could just, I've been trying to impress myself, and I don't even understand what I could do to do that, other than giving them $20 million to go to Mars.
That's funny. You're documenting, you pretty much, what you've been doing is you've been documenting your
my whole life.
Your journey in the publishing industry.
And that's
which
what,
is,
and that
which
is one
has
of the
much
things
more
I
to
really
do than
like.
Just books. It's more than just books for you, you know, it is the hotel phase. It is the, I think I saw a picture of you, like, when you had went to Disney World or something like that.
Right, with my family.
You show, like, you show up in a lot of different places, you know, and like I'm saying, it's more than just, here is me standing in front of a book smiling. It's like, you know, I went, while I was in the city, I went here, I went there, you know, I stayed here, you know, I saw this
well,
person.
See, I'm the most, I try to cram in as much as I possibly can. When I go anywhere, you know, if I do have an event in a city, I always research to find out what's there. I like museums, so that will be easy. It's easy to go, you know, find out museums in, you know, museums in Anchorage, Alaska. And of course, there's a museum there. There should be a zoo there. Anywhere, there should be a zoo. You know, there's things that we all, and you know what else that led me to this? Reading books. The funniest thing is, most of the things that I experienced, I used to write down, Joey, this is no lie, and I don't know if anybody else that reads do this. I literally, if I read about a good place in the book, I write the place down, and I actually check to see if it's a real place.
I do that,
You know, I take, in my books, my readers, you know, anything they, read about in my books is real. Any restaurant, I don't change the names, I don't change the locations.
Right.
You know, if you want to go to any of them places, like if you see, we were talking about Ravon LaMell from Murder and German Tim. You see him go to a 5-star restaurant and he orders some crazy extravagant meal. Believe
mm-hmm.
me, I went to that website, to that restaurant, or I went there myself, and I either had it or I looked at the menu, and I put in the book what's on the menu. You can, whatever you see in my books, you can do.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's what's up. Let's talk about, I'm going to ask you something about your book once more. We're going to talk about the transition from who you were when you wrote Laugh Now. And all the what did you learn from writing Laugh Now that made Die Later a better book?
Oh yeah, because Die Later is much better, by the way. you know, the conferences, going to Thriller Fest, going to BoxerCon, going to any event. Oh, and doing the Mystery Writers of America and going to their monthly meetings where they bring in specialists. You know, those things made me plot better, made me make my plots more realistic and strong. And, you know, when you make certain areas of your plot stronger, you have to make the things that lead up to those elements strong. Like, I always start off with my book plots thinking of the most outrageous thing. Like, okay, Raheem, I'm going to do this. Like, okay, let's say I'm going to make up something funny. And I'm going to say, I want a train to go through a house.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, no, I would never do that in the story because I don't like killing people off like that, but
right.
I would think to myself, how does that happen? How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? Well, one, we just had the news account where the guy was doing 160 or 70 around the curve and took the train off the track. But we know in some rural areas where we have those trains in those areas that the tracks, you know, they practically run right through the houses in some rural areas when you got,
yeah.
you know, like Amtrak, stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I would have to think, how does my story get there? How does my character that has to be, mind you, and someone has to be affected by it. Like, I don't do random acts don't happen in my story. Everything is for a reason. Nothing happens by accident.
I want to ask you about that because I remember reading. I think you said something about that on Facebook about how your books are plot driven and not character driven. Like you don't let the characters run away with the story and go do random things, and you kind of like, oh, that's cool. Let me write that into the story. You actually like have
right.
the plots and the character follows the plot instead of the plot following the character.
Why
do you do that? What's your theory on that? Where'd you learn that from?
Well, I learned that from listening to other authors speak and reading. You know, there's a difference between the two. And I've always liked stories. I think most mystery novels are plot driven. You know, basically, crime happens in the beginning and throughout the story, person solves the crime by the end. I always start, when I read certain stories. And even if I'm reading for a submission, or if I'm reading, you know, a friend's book, or if I'm reading, you know, somebody posted a book and they posted enough that I say, okay, let me give this book a chance. What I often could do is I can look at the beginning of the book, and I just look for what's supposed to happen in the story. Like, what's the point of the story? You know, so for me, a good book is like the Law and Order series. The series, every single as one of them starts with, something happens, then everything else in
right,
the rest
right.
of that longer episode is relevant to that thing that happened. Like, you notice
that's
the longer the
yeah.
character, you notice in Law and Order, they don't go home typically. You don't see the detectives at home. You don't see the detectives just doing random things. You don't see the prosecutor at home. You don't see them really dealing with family drama. Very infrequently would they even, you know, talk about what's going on in their personal lives. And that's why we have been glued to Law and Order, all the various ones they spun off from the main Law and Order. We've been into them because they get you where you need to be yet without any slow points. And I think that's what my books do. There are no slow points. There is no – my characters are doing something at all times, and something relevant to the overall plot is going to happen to them in every single scene. They're not going to just be having breakfast, watching TV, having, oh, let me call my grandma. And no, if my character's called grandma might get kidnapped through the phone call.
Somebody said somebody having a grandma, huh?
Yeah, grandma might get kidnapped. You know, right. Something's going to happen if they're just sitting there doing nothing. You know, and I think that is what, readers that haven't read any of my books, that's what you can expect from me. You can expect me to, you know, keep you literally a page turner. I don't have any moments where the story just goes this on this damn slide and you're like, okay, well, I'm waiting for something to happen now.
Now, I also want to ask you this, because it's tied into what you just said, because nothing is random in your book. Everything is kind of metered out and kind of planned, and everything ties into each other. I want to throw out, I figure the same kind of holds true for the way you name your characters, what their names. So I want to throw out some character names, and I want you to, if you can, give me the history behind how did you choose their names. So I want to start off with Ravon LaMail. Like, how did you come up with this name for your main character in Murder in Germantown?
You're not going to believe this. Okay. A lot of the Murder in Germantown characters came from it came from a prison roster of inmates that was on my unit. What happened was, I was going through my box one day, and I don't know how, when I was there, I worked in the law library, and people used to sign up to come.
Right.
So one day, I must have left the law library and went back to my unit with the sheet, and somehow it got mixed in with my stuff, and it came home with me. So
okay.
I pretty much just randomly went on that sheet and just picked names off of it to make the characters in that story. That one was very, very random. And most of the times, the characters are very random. Like, if I am watching a TV show credits and I'm in the process of naming a character or doing something, and I see something that's, I will write it there, and I'll just use it.
How'd you come across the Bezel surname for the Bezel brothers?
Well, the Bezel brothers. Okay,
That's Last Now and Die Later, right? Those two books.
Right, now the Bezel brothers. They're okay. Kareem is my cousin Kareem, and Andre is my youngest sister's. That's her boyfriend's name. So that's why I picked those names. Although they are not like the characters themselves, but I did name the two brothers after them. Now, Bezel, I had shortened that from embezzlement because that was one of the first titles of the book.
I was going to ask that. When I was coming up with that question, I was like, I wonder if this has anything to do with embezzling and embezzlement.
Right, it did. Right, embezzlement was one of the first book titles, and then it had went to Checkmate was another one. And then when I got out of jail, I was trying to get people to help me, and you know, I remembered before I went, I had a ton of friends that would help me do anything. It was involving something illegal, or you know, and, you know, I could get help do anything. But now I'm trying to do this, I couldn't get no help. And I renamed the book Last Now because in my head, I felt like people were not supporting me and my new mission. I didn't receive the kind of support that I wanted to or expected to get. So I was like, Last Now, okay. However, I do know that I'm going to get the last laugh. And that was another one of my motivating factors. Like, that made me work even harder. Like, I'm going to show these bastards that I can do it.
Right.
And I think that's
kind of a tie into one of my earlier questions. Like, you know, what made you so driven to, you know, get your ducks in order and do the research and do the hard footwork and stuff?
I did then. Now I feel like I did it already. So now I don't even think about that no more. It's funny, the people that I started it about, I'm not even friends with, you know. So it's like, I'm not friends with them pretty much, and their life is what it was before I went to jail, and their life's still the same.
Right. I mean, that's what happens with people. And when you kind of immerse yourself in whatever your field is, a lot of times, you know, you tend to not purposefully distance yourself from people that you were close to prior to your immersion, but just a natural thing. Just like you were talking about, you know, you was born in a certain tribe, you know, had certain customs, a certain culture, and then you move to another area where you have to survive in a totally different way, and you gain new experiences and new outlooks and a new skill set. It's kind of hard to come back and be that same person that you were in that tribe before you left. And I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Well, it's bad for me a little bit, because sometimes it hurts a little bit, because there's times when everybody knows that I often am by myself at a lot of places, a lot of things I do, a lot of traveling I've done. I have been by myself, and that's because I really don't, I just don't have the kind of people that I want to deal with on a daily basis that I used to before. It was just fun and games. Life was just a ball of, you know, a ball of fun. Now,
right.
Honestly, it's not, you know, sometimes I'm at restaurants with my laptop. I'm working. Yeah, I'm eating, but my laptop is right there.
Right.
So,
right. It's a business. It's more than just a passing, like you said, it's more than just fun and games. It's actually like a business strategy behind what you're doing, and got to be pretty consistent in it in order for your plans to actually come to fruition.
Right, definitely. Well, consistency is number one. I just made a post about that, you know, last week. Like, consistency is required for everything. You can't be happy without being consistently trying to be happy. Nothing happens by accident. Like, you have to be consistent. You have to be on your job at it, or it won't work.
Right.
I'm sure of that.
I'm gonna ask you about this Prodigy Publishing Group. What vision did you have, or what vision do you have for this publishing company in terms of the product that you put out?
Well, firstly, it has to have a broad audience. I know everything has a genre. I think that all of my novels have genres. The difference is I have a reader base, and they'll read. I write so that they will read anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If it's science fiction, I haven't done science fiction yet, but I think that my core readers will buy my science fiction. If I wrote romance, they would buy my romance. I think it's all in the way you write, because I see people that, well, I'm not see. I know people, and you being in your position in the industry, you have, I'm sure, as well. There's people that can read, you know, Wahida Clark and Kwan right now, and then tomorrow they're reading Sue Grafton and Anne Rice.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just agreeing with you.
Right. It's those type of writers that I always try to seek out. I like plots where I can sell the book to anybody, to any bookstore, you know, unless it's a specific store that sells only urban or only mystery or only sci-fi. If it's a store like that, that's one thing. But if it's a store that carries everything, I want to be able to make it like almost general, where it could be sold to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want stories that are going to only be of interest to one set.
Now, in terms of you being a solo type of person, because of the industry and how you know, and the way you're trying to, like, the way you're, what made you bring on other authors of the Prodigy Publishing Group? Like, how'd you end up, like, with this publishing company with not just your books, but also, like, I don't know, you probably, like, what, five or six, maybe more than that, authors that you have, you know, that are coming through your company. How did you go about deciding, okay, I'm going to go ahead and start publishing some other authors?
Well, it was more about me understanding what other authors were going through and trying to get published.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my thing. I wanted to try to help them, and if I saw something, but I thought that would be easy, but it wasn't. And you know, it wasn't until I became, you know, publisher that I realized it's not easy to pick a story to invest all of your money and time into.
Right.
It's not easy. And that was the most challenging thing. Like, it's, you know, when you reject somebody's story, you know, they may, you know, they can feel like they're not good enough.
Yeah. They take it and personally as opposed to professionally.
Yeah, I don't want that. I'm not looking to tear nobody down, but,
right.
You know, I know the kind of stories that I want.
And you're pretty sure you got a good idea of what sales too, you know, what style.
Yeah, I mean, for
you're able to put your money behind the sales.
Yeah, because, you know, it's the stuff that, again, like the other authors or that newer authors haven't been able to do yet. You know, my conversations with bookstores, I mean, I call bookstores all the time. And there's times when I call them to check on inventory, to send them more books or to, you know, confirm a PayPal payment or whatever. And I have an hour-long conversation with a bookstore owner about just all things in general.
Right.
And it's those lessons that, you know, the everyday authors aren't getting because they aren't making these kind of phone calls. You know, every day is a new thing to learn for me. It's something to learn every single day.
I'm gonna switch gears a little bit because we've been talking about your books, but let's talk about some of the other authors that you have on Prodigy Publishing Group. I'm gonna throw out a name and a title, and what I would like for you to do is, you know, tell us a little bit about the author and also the book. We're gonna start off with James Scott because I actually had a chance to interview him recently for Buffalo City Czar. So tell us a little bit about him and his book.
All right, well, James Scott, okay, let me clarify. James Scott is the only author that I actually signed to a book deal.
Okay.
And when you thought the other names, I will explain to you how my association began with those other authors and those books. But James Scott is the only author who I have an acquisitions editor, and she read the opening of his book, and she requested the whole book because we only ask for the first, I think, 30 pages. And if that's good, then we'll ask for the rest.
Okay.
But James Scott was the first, and he has been the first one that, you know, she read the whole book, and then I read the whole book, and we both was like, yeah, we need to get that. I have had other books who say, okay, yeah, we like these first 30, submit the rest, and they don't submit because they're not really done the book. They're not really done the book.
Oh, okay.
They say they're finished, but when you ask them for the rest of it, they don't produce it. So, but James Scott's book, Buffalo City Czar, was interesting because while the main characters were drug dealers, there was an element of mystery and suspense there, which I knew that through development and through editing, could have really been brought out. And I think we really did do that through editing that book. We did a really good job at that. What was also interesting is that he had a good way of helping you understand the characters. Like, the characters were very well developed where they were believable. They didn't, you know, the book didn't start off with them already driving S550s and – you know, having millions of dollars. It started off with them literally at a juvenile facility, banding together to become brothers because they were black and they, you know, had an altercation with, you know, some white guys at the juvenile police that they was in. So they started off bonding there, and then everything else that connected them together just made sense. That when you grow up with somebody, you tend to do a lot of things with them. And that's how the main characters, you know, were developed. And he did a good job at doing that all by himself. He didn't even need help in making the characters believable or readable.
Well, for people that's not familiar with James Gunn and Buffalo Cities Are, give us a brief synopsis of what that book is, just in case they might want to look into it and buy it themselves.
All right, Buffalo Cities Are, of course, it takes place in Buffalo City. And basically, it's the story of a kid named Julius, who, of course, became Julius Caesar, and Caesar is where the czar comes from. And, he is just a little kid who wants to provide for himself and his family, and he basically teams up with two of his friends, and they build a very big empire. What was unique about the empire is that I never asked James this. I've asked him a lot of different things about how he came up with the plot, but one thing I have asked him is he wanted the book to seem more mafia-like than local drug dealer-like. And I think that's the fundamental difference, and it is more Godfather than New York City, than New Jack City.
Right.
And they're
more organized with what they're doing. It's like a corporation, basically.
Right, and they did have a corporation.
Okay.
So that's the key thing. But I'm pulling up right now the actual. Excuse me. I do have it right here. So the synopsis in the beginning is basically about, you know, three troubled teens, Julius, Billy, and Mike, and their quest to find money and power and the life that most can only imagine. So Julius basically is the leader, and he starts off with doing little small crimes, and he has an uncle who's a pimp, and the uncle teaches him how to treat and, if you will, manipulate women. So he uses that. But he teaches the other two guys that know nothing about women how to do it as well. So, like I said, it's, you know, for them to be young, and it does show them go from a young age on up, so you get to see everything. It was just done very good, and I knew just based on the stuff that I was seeing that I would be able to make the story better. And as a team, we did a very good job with Buffalo Cities R.
As a tie-in to him, I'm going to ask you about English Ruler, because she's your acquisition editor, right? Was she the one you talked about earlier?
Wait, hold on a second.
Okay,
say it again.
So I was going to segue into the next person I'm going to ask you about in terms of the author and the book title. English Ruler, is she the acquisition editor you were talking about that read Buffalo Cities Are initially?
Yes.
Okay. And she wrote a book called Hoism, Born to Do It. So what's your connection with her and her book?
Well, she is the president of ARC Book Club, and I had kind of early on developed a strong bond and connection with all of the ladies of ARC Book Club. And we were just talking one day, the two of us, and I think I was becoming overwhelmed with submissions, and I was looking for someone that could help me, and she offered to help. And it started off just helping, literally, no payment, no type of contract, just, look, read this and tell me if you would read it, if you like it, and let, you know. And I liked her judgment on her book reviews and, you know, what I had knew about her and how she felt about books. So I don't ever think that, like, I've never second-guessed anything that she has sent to me in an email or through a telephone conversation. You know, now it's a little more uniform where there's a form she fills out with, you know, relevant details, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a story sheet where we flesh out certain things, and, you know, she articulates what she feels, the good, the bad, the ugly, what can be fixed, what can't be. If it's just not for me at all, she kind of understands those things very well. So we work good together as far as her helping me acquire novels to publish.
Okay. Well, what's her book about? Like, how did her book? I saw her book on your website also. What's the brief synopsis of what she has to offer?
Her novel, Who Was Born to Do It, is about a girl named Shanae Alexander, whose life mission is to just ruin people's lives. And it's what she does in the novel that just makes her like a flat out just like a hoe. And
right. She
isn't like a prostitute being paid. She just ruins people's lives for practically no reason whatsoever. And I don't want to tell too much about the plot. I do want to tell one thing that really just like blew me away when I had read it before she published
mm-hmm.
it. I was reading it along the way. Wait a minute. I'm exposed to that. She, in the very beginning of the book, you know, her boyfriend picks her up and from work, and they're driving to an abortion clinic. And during the chat with the doctor, it's revealed, you know, that she was pregnant or something to that effect. But in the end, it's not his baby.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the book just starts off with her just ruining this particular man's life. And then she ruins the marriage. She's just very bad. I don't know what inspired in English to really bring this character to life, but she did it, and it was done, you know, it was done well. I remember in the beginning when she was doing it, she was kind of skeptical about the title and stuff, and book cover.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you cover a book? Hoism. What do you put on the cover of that book?
Right, right.
So, of course, I got my guy, Gregory Goodwin, and I told him about it, and them two linked up. And she had one idea, and then he added, you know, the book cover has the fishbowl with all the condoms in it. And
mm-hmm.
That was her original idea. English wanted that. She definitely wanted condoms in the fishbowl. But then
right. When
Greg sent it back with a hand in it and everything, and then like a little shadow of the body in the background. It was very interesting. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm kind of, yeah, I like the fact that I was in on that project helping out. It always makes me feel good when people's projects do well that I've edited or proofread or worked on at all.
Right. The next person I'm going to ask you about is a person I've actually had a chance to interview on on my 5 minutes, 5 questions with author interview series. I didn't know I had a connection with you. It's Christopher Clark for his book, Till It Happens to You.
Okay. Christopher Clark. Let me discuss
mm-hmm.
Christopher Clark and Henry Red at the same time.
Okay.
Okay.
He was the other person I was going to ask you about, but go ahead.
Yeah, let me discuss them two off the bat. Now, Christopher Clark and Henry Red both had a book come out around the same time as me.
Mm-hmm.
And what the three of us had did was we used to bounce ideas off each other and run a lot of different things by each other. And it was like, okay, we should form a little team and let's just do it. So that's what we did. It was us three, and we just start, like, now we're just brothers and sisters, like, to each other.
Right.
I definitely call Envy my sister, and I really do relate to her as such. Same thing with Chris. You know, we're way past books and book ideas. Like, we have personal connection to each other. Those two I've been around, been with for a very long time. And like I said, we just developed this connection, but The only thing is, they've always had full-time careers. I was just the only one that didn't. So while we all have our own companies, you know, again, with our, you know, through our checks and stuff, I did decide to take on their books along with my projects like they were my own. So, of course, when I sell books, I sell theirs. When I, on my website, of course, their books are there. Although I didn't publish them, they're my friends. They're my closest two people in the industry. And pretty much anything that I could do for them and my while I'm advancing, I'm going to do.
That's what's up.
So, yeah, and that's and it's like that for because Chris and Emmy both have brought me in on their signings, their anything they've done, they've brought me in on, or at least asked me. Like I don't see them doing a lot of different things. You know, we consult with each other about a lot of different things before we do it. And even to this day, like if I have something that I really need to run by them, like I know I could get them to. And if I was to, we laugh about this all the time. If I was to show some of our text messages, like us three together, oh gosh, like you guys have no idea how much fun we really be having. Like it is ridiculous. We really do have a good time together. And those are two people that I've definitely have added. They are like my bona fide true friends, like deeper than friends. Like we are really, you know, we're in.
It's always good to make those close connections. And I guess like when, going back to that analogy of like being in a tribe and moving to the big city, I guess when you move out and you immerse yourself in the field that you choose, you know, that's what happens. You start to make new family members. You make new friends and make new close connections, and that's definitely a testament to that, considering that, like we just pointed out, they're on your website, but they're not necessarily people that you've actually published. But they're still close enough where, hey, if they do, they'll do for you and you do for them. And sometimes, I have to admit, that's kind of hard to find in the book industry because a lot of authors act like it's all everybody's your competitor. You know, like, if you sell a book, that's one less sale I got, and they take that mentality. So, you know, from my perspective and what I've seen, a lot of times it's like it kind of makes it cutthroat when it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Yeah, but you know what? I've never viewed anybody like that. Honestly, I mean, I always see people that post, oh, I don't have no competition. I'm only in competition with myself. Like, I know that that's a lie, and you know that's a lie based on what you just said, but I will say that I happen to be one of the people where your sales aren't going to bother mine. I know that for a fact. What you're doing, I'm not doing, and vice versa. So I'm not worried about you stopping me from doing anything. I never forget, in the very beginning, I did a book signing with Quan, and he came to Philadelphia, and we were down to at the bookstore, and he was selling his book, and I was selling mine. And I'm going to almost say 100% of the time, when a buyer was confused or when they were up in the air, like, damn, I want to get this Quan book because I know what Quan does, but damn, you're a new author, and you signed it with Quan, so you must be having a good book too. He would tell them flat out. He would flat out tell them, like his exact words, almost verbatim, was, go ahead and buy his book because my books are going to sell.
Right.
Flat out.
Get his.
I'm not even worried about it. Get his book because I know for a fact my books are going to sell. Don't worry about me. Buy his. That was just not valuable to show the type of man that he is. It also was valuable to show me the type of author I need to be. So that's why, you know, I have every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, I invite three or four authors to come to the bookstore downtown Philly. And I have a Thanksgiving signing, and I have a Christmas signing where I invite them all. I have never had an incident, and I've done them both 2 years straight. I have never had an incident where there was a problem with anybody buying or selling the book during either one of those two events, either time. And there's times where I've gone to that store and sold 60 books in one signing, 40 books in one signing, and you pretty much could do the same thing around Christmas time when the mall is jam-packed to capacity.
Yeah.
Four people at one mall, and, you know, it's to the point where, one, I help those authors build bonds and relationships with each other. Two, by the time the night ends, we have rehearsed. We know everybody's plot lines, even though we have never even read the books. If I'm with a sign, doing a signing with you, I'm going to be able to articulate about your books because when a person walks up, it should be, I'm Raheem Brooks. This is Joy Pinkney. My book is this. His book is that. They can make a choice from there.
Right, right. And it's purely yours at that point. Yeah.
Right. So I have never. I even did last year at the Baltimore Book Festival, you know, me, Chris, and I'm drawing the blank. She's going to kill me. Me, Chris, editor Carla Dean, and okay. I forgot the other author name, and she is really going to kill me I got her face in my head, but I just can't think of her name. But we had all went to the Baltimore Book Festival together, and me and Chris both sold over 100 books, and she came for one day because she had to work Friday and didn't want to come on Sunday, and she did her thing that one day. And Carla Dean pretty much sold all of her T-shirts that she had. I know for a fact it's money to be made in this industry, and you don't have to step on nobody's toes, and you don't have to hate nobody else to do it. I think everybody got – and you know what? I'm not connected with people where I got, you know, a bunch of beefs and a bunch of gossip. I'm not into all of that, so – I'm not affected by a lot of things. Like you said, I'm only affected by stuff I say. But
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have seen I have scaled back on
we're not gonna even talk about like the Facebook stuff that happened when you make simple comments. There's been times I made a simple comment on one of your posts, and man, I'm sitting there like instant messaging, like, how do we get to start talking about shades and all this kind of stuff? I thought we were talking about a hat in the, you remember the one we were talking about the hat in the restaurant? Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, we were talking about like shades and holding open doors, and I was just like, man, where did all this stuff come from? But yeah, I see where you're going with that. I ain't mean to stop you, but it just kind of came to my mind that, yeah, sometimes, you know, people are just kind of waiting to spike your head off for no reason.
Yeah, I know. Listen, Joey, I know for a fact that it's people that I won't put it past nobody. I won't put it past nobody just waiting for me to have a tragedy. I really do.
Yeah,
it's it seems like things are such a great course that people are just like, oh, I just can't wait for it to happen because it's going to happen to him. He is going to fall. Whatever horse he's on, he going to fall off of that, and it is going to be something else that he do. But they don't even understand, like, you know, me coming back from any type of failure, like, I don't do nothing to make myself have a failure. That's the thing.
Right.
I'm not, like, you know, I was listening to a radio show, and they were talking about how a lot of famous people have done bad things to become famous. We know, like, mm-hmm. P. Diddy, he has, you know, jerked people around with their money and contracts. Jay-Z has done things, and Donald Trump mm-hmm. has done things. When you think about the most powerful people and richest people, they all have bad things. Even the beloved Beyonce. We would never know how the first group members got kicked out the group, and then the two after that got kicked out the group.
Yeah.
We don't really know what happened, but you can rest assured that a lot of people that's rich and famous, they have done things to people to crush other people. I don't do anything in this industry that sets out to crush anybody. If I don't like your book, I publicly say I don't like your fucking book. Pardon my language. I don't talk behind your back. I don't be calling up all my friends and saying, you know, that book is trash. No, I'm going to give you a 2-star review, and I really could care less about what you think about it. I don't care.
At the end of the day, it's an opinion.
Yeah, right. I don't do anything that's disrespectful to people. I don't backbite people. I don't call people up gossiping. You know, I get gossip. One thing for sure, Raheem Brisbane raised for gossip. You can bet your bottom dollar that. I have never once spread anybody's business. I see some of the most amazing things go on in this industry. You be at every event, and you will get to see things that you know for a fact needs to stay behind closed doors.
Yeah.
I don't get into gossiping. I don't get into telling people business. I don't lie on people. I don't create stories. I don't bullshit people. If I say I'm going to do it, I do it. I have never cheated nobody. Nobody can't say they ordered books from me and they ain't receive them. Nobody never gives me no money. I stop answering their phone calls and don't take their messages or don't send for the dude. I have no bad business in this industry other than telling you how it is. That's about it. And now if that's a flaw, me telling you the facts, then I'm dead to wrong. But I don't do nothing. I don't do anything where people should like dislike me or anything like that. I really don't. So, you know, me having a downfall, I would have to create it myself.
I want to ask you speak more about the literary war show that you put on too. I remember you talking about the Thanksgiving and Christmas book signings that you invite authors to. But you also have a literary war show that you've been putting on for a couple of years that's, you know, also an event to bring in a lot of authors and readers to the same spot.
Well, and that's basically all it was for. I didn't know that there was already the African-American award show. I didn't know that they had that at the time when I put about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to do it. And I did that my first year out. I didn't even know it would be a success. I didn't know what the hell was going on when it was.
Right.
Like, it was, I amazed myself. And I just wanted to do one simple thing. Bring everybody together and do something. I couldn't win no award. I couldn't be nominated. I didn't ask no money to buy no trophies. I didn't ask nobody to help me set it up. I pay for the website. I pay for the trophies. I do all it all on my own. I don't gain any sense out of it.
For the people that don't know about it, what's the name of it?
It's I am actually, you know what? It used to have Facebook on it. It used to be the Facebook Literary Awards, but now it's just the Prodigy Publishing Group Literary Awards.
Okay. Well, when is it? Are you going to do it again this what is it? You already done it for this year. Are you going to do it again next year?
Yeah, it's done this year. I'm doing it next year. I'm doing it every year. I need to try to find a you know, I do have, like, a little committee that this year was a little bit better because I actually invite people to be the to nominate. You one of them.
What
I do is I actually get the ballots. And you notice this year in the group, which is, you know, a private group, I actually asked them what genres we should add. Instead of me just being a dictator and just doing things how I want to do it, I actually let the people that I had on my committee do it. So that way it has a little bit more balance where I don't think I'm just doing stuff that benefits other people.
Right.
So I want to make it as transparent as I possibly can.
I'm going to ask you this. In terms of your writing, in terms of when you sit down and actually write, do you play music? What's your environment like? How do you set the tone? Or do you just write like when you're out and about? Like, what's your most optimal writing zone?
I have to be out in the public. That's the sad thing.
So you need some noise around you. You need some horns blaring and people walking
and
by.
I need my Walkman with earphones, and I can't be in the house. I need to be in the public. And I think that's because where I began writing at. One, the tail end of my little sentence, I was in a dorm. And you can imagine a dorm with 126 inmates. It was never a dull or quiet moment. And I happened to be in the first cubicle. It was broken down into cubes, and there was three people in each section. I was in the very first one. And on the opposite wall was the four computers that we used to, you know, send out our little emails. And on the opposite wall was the four rooms for to make phone calls. and then the two game rooms was right across, and it was just it was blocked off with a door. But in that room, you still could hear people there yelling and screaming and slamming dominoes. You still could hear all that. Then the laundry room was also right there. That's my area, and I was like right there. So, you know, noise for me is like a normal thing. And right. And there was other times when I would go to the jail library, which it's not your college library, it's loud, still there. And I will also write on, because I'm really into sports, so when it was like basketball games or, you know, softball games, I would go to those things, and I would have my notepad or whatever I was doing, and I would be there writing. I would be writing whatever. So that's why now, like, if you see me go to an NBA game, and I got my laptop, because I take it, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. People be trying to ask me that right here. You pay to go to the game, but you take your laptop. Yeah, because for me, I'm just watching the game. I don't have to watch every single second. So I'm just willing to pay to go for the environment and, you know, hang out and chill and get some work done. It's all the same to me.
All right, we've been at this for almost an hour and a half. We got a couple more minutes left. I want to give you a chance to tell people where they can find you online and what they should be looking out for, you know, in the future.
Well, you can find me online. I have a mansion on Facebook. That's my main home. I stay there all the time in my mansion on Facebook. It's Raheem, R-A-H-I-E-M, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S. You can find me there on Facebook. On Instagram, I have a summer home in the Florida Keys. That's my summer home is in Florida Keys. On Instagram, I'm Raheem the Writer, R-A-H-I-E-M, the T-H-E, Writer, W-R-I-T-E-R, Raheem the Writer on Instagram. I'm also on those other sites. I have a little spot on Tumblr, Flickr. You can find me there as well. That's social media. But the best place to find me, no, not even the best place. I have a few places. I got too many places. Goodreads. If you are a reader and you like to see full details and descriptions about books, you can find me on Goodreads and Shelfari. Shelfari is S-H-E-L-F-A-R-I, Shelfari. And Goodreads is good and reads with an S, one word, .com. You can find me there too. My books also, you can just keyword search me on Amazon, Kindle, Nook, iTunes, iBooks, iPad, Sony e-reader, wherever you want. Wherever you want to find me in my books, I'm sure you can get it. And
that's what's up, man. I want to thank you for giving us an hour and a half of your time, man, and breaking it down for us, man. It's been an honor and a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk to you at length, you know, and speak to you about books and stuff, man. So once again, Tribe Family Channel, JoePinger.com. We both appreciate you, Raheem.
I appreciate you, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, no problem. All right, Beverly, take us out of here.